Now, as always, you always come with something fresh. You always come with something interesting, and you're always very, very passionate to talk about books and to talk about the love for books. So thank you so much for joining the show, talking about Bookstock.
Hey, Bookstock is coming. Bookstock starts Sunday, runs through the following Sunday. It's Michigan's largest used book and media sale. The number dazzles me. We have more than 400,000 items this year. Books, DVDs, CDs, vinyl records, audiobooks. Somebody may sneak in an 8-track or two, but we try to weed those out. But it's a massive fundraiser for literacy and education projects. Bookstock is a volunteer-run nonprofit, and we exist to make money by selling books and funnel that money to literacy and education projects.
And, you know, when I think about that and you talk about it being volunteer-based and you talk about that type of community that's been built around Bookstock, can you explain that a little bit, the volunteers and the, I guess you can say, the family that you all have made through this initiative?
You know, that's a great point. They're, you know, the volunteers come from all over the place, but there really does become a family kind of build up an atmosphere to it. You get, you know, we see a lot of familiar faces.
Yeah.
And we've learned over the years which ones to step out of the way of. This Sunday is the only time there's an admission charge at Laurel Park Place.
Yeah.
From 8:15 to 11, there's a pre-sale, and $20 gets you in the door ahead of everybody else who's going to come over the course of the week. And when the doors open, stampede is too harsh a word, but don't stand between, for instance, the cookbook lovers and the cookbooks. You know, one of my favorite Bookstock moments ever, and I've been involved for a long time, TV reporters, bless their hearts, and for lack of anything else to do at 8:15 on a Sunday morning, TV covers us generously.
Yeah.
And I saw somebody doing a live report get elbowed out of the way.
Oh, no.
Yeah, nothing malicious, but just enthusiasm.
Yes.
Cookbooks.
Yes. And, you know, these are books that are, you know, donated. Like you said, these are books that are coming from different places and spaces. And they are often books that maybe will make you think about something differently, especially when we're talking about cooking and you have cookbooks from maybe a different region or a different culture. And it's just like, oh, get out of my way. I have to cook this new, you know, have to go down this new path. So, you know, as we continue to talk about this, if you could go into the importance of, you know, that beauty, that love, that passion that you see at Bookstock every year when you have people running in trying to get that book.
Well, you know, it's, I should mention, it's not just like we have 400,000 books stacked in, you know, one big
yeah.
pile and you have to climb over it. It's all sorted. So whatever your interest is, you'll find it. But one of the things that has struck me over the years, talking about just, we all wondered if books were dying.
Yeah, we did.
15 years ago, you know, we all kind of looked at each other at a board meeting and said, geez, you know, is this the society for the advancement of the Walkman? Oh, is this dead technology? But the fact is, you know, we've raised $2.5 million selling books. For most of them for a dollar, most hardbounds maybe $3 or $4, people still want books. And it's not just that people still want to read, which would be reassuring enough. They want physical books to hold in their laps.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of my philosophy on this, is that we're the best way to get books out of basements where they're being ignored and back in people's laps where they belong.
Have you heard throughout your time with Bookstock and just, you know, being a book lover in general, the rise, of course, of the e-readers, the e-books, you know, the different Kindles and different things like that. Have you seen or noticed those going kind of out of the, going away?
Oh, I don't think they'll ever go away. And I think, you know, probably more and more people are using those devices. But, you know, what we're learning is there's no real slacking off in
yeah.
terms of the people buying physical books. And I think booksellers will tell you the same thing, that people who want, you know, there's a cadre of readers who don't just want to read, they want to read books and magazines and blessedly newspapers, and they want to hold them in their hands.
Yeah. That is so true. I think about the articles that we often want to read from, any publication that's around here, from the Metro Times to the Free Press. You want to hold those physical copies. So, you know, talking to Neil Rubin right now about book stock and the love of books that we're seeing across the country. So we're going to pivot a little bit here and talk about the increasing censorship we're starting to see around some of the books and the readings guides for different schools and different places around the country. What are you seeing right now?
I think it's scary. Yeah. I'm seeing kind of what everybody else is seeing. We're supposed to be open to new ideas and or even old ideas. Yeah. You know, just standard ideas. You look at some of the books getting banned, and Maya Angelou, what on earth does she have to do? And why are certain people so afraid of certain concepts? Yeah. It's not a revelation to say that most of the books that are getting yanked off shelves or are getting librarians in jeopardy are LGBTQ themed or anything race-based that somebody can decide is critical race theory. Not that they know what critical race theory is. They just know those three words and that they're supposed to be scared or opposed to that. And it's just this cascade of willful ignorance that's really alarming.
And, you know, it's so interesting that, you know, we talk about this is the idea that reading actually helps you learn and have a more open mind about things. So when we talk about this situation, talk about the kids and what they may be going through and their mind process and their thought process of losing some books and losing access to information.
Well, exactly. And, you know, it used to be this was almost cute. I mean, a new Harry Potter book would come out and some library in Southwest Michigan would, you know, it promotes witchcraft. We want this out of our library. Well, we haven't noticed any serious uptick in the number of wizards. You know, I don't think Harry Potter hurt anybody. But I spoke a couple weeks ago to a woman named Tracy Bedford at Southfield Public Library. It's a wonderful library. It's like if a library was a theme park, you would want to take your kids to Southfield Public Library. And there's an analogy she uses, or an illusion, windows, mirrors, and sliding glass doors. And I actually wrote myself a note here so I'd quote her correctly. And she says she got this from someone else, but I heard it from her. So as far as I'm concerned, Tracy Bedford is the woman on this. She says, kids need books, need literature that provides windows so they can see how other people's lives look. Mirrors so they can see themselves in literature, and sliding glass doors so they can walk through and experience both. I just love that.
I know. I'm looking at Chase now. Tweet that out somewhere. Tweet it on our Culture Shift page. It's amazing. I know. That is an amazing quote. And, you know, where did that put your mind when you heard that?
Oh, I just thought it was absolutely perfect. And it explains why it's so important to have those windows available on shelves in libraries, in school libraries. I spoke to a children's book author a little while ago named Bryn Barnes, who lives in Southfield as well. She wrote a wonderful book. She's written a couple, but the one that caught my attention was Black Girl Rising. And I asked her, I said, you know, did this, and she is black, and I said, did this book exist? Did anything like this exist when you were a young reader, and was it important? And she said it did not exist, and she actively looked for it.
Yeah.
You know, I never had to do that.
Yeah.
Every book, you know, I was a white suburban kid. Every book was white suburban kids, or at least white kids, or kids that I had no problem being invested in, or seeing myself in, so that it never even occurred to me that other people needed that.
Yeah.
You know, in the same conversation, I was talking to Anita Paisner, another children's book author locally. Her current book is called Topsy Turvy Bus. And we started out talking about, you know, race and, you know, representation. And Anita said, heck, it was at the toy store. And Anita is white, but she said she'd go to the toy store and there were no dark-haired dolls. All the dolls were blonde.
Yeah.
And because I've never had any problem seeing myself represented, it never occurred to me in the slightest that other people were desperately seeking that sort of recognition of who they were. And I don't want to get off on my illustrated lecture here, but you take that now to books themed or just mentioning LGBTQ kids or issues. I have gay friends. Tony Paul from the Detroit News, a wonderful sports writer, a wonderful guy. And he says, he would have ached for books. The kind of books that are getting banned would have made a huge difference in his life as he was growing up as, an athletic kid, but gay, and he knew it in conservative Paw, Michigan.
Yeah. I mean, that's only something that we couldn't even put our feet in our feet in his position. We couldn't do it because it's something that we just would not understand. And to have a book or to have something like that for him to have gone to, and for even now today, for kids to have the books and have access to different information, you can truly see them coming into fruition, coming into themselves now. However, they're being stomped in some sense of that way of growing and becoming, themselves. They're doing a lot of fighting in order to keep a lot of their rights and a lot of the books and a lot of the things that they want on the shelves. So as we continue to go, are you really like where is your sense as we go forward with this? Where are your sense when we talk about censoring and banning of books? Where do you see us going with this?
I don't know. The hope is that as with a lot of things, it's cyclical.
Yeah.
But it makes for good politics in certain states. And will that go away? Or will it show itself to be ineffective? That's the only way I think this goes away, if, as a political strategy, it doesn't work. In which case, people will move on to something else. The notion that, my two mommies, makes a six-year-old a lesbian. No, but it makes her more understanding of the family down the block. And it seems like that's something we should strive for.
Yes, togetherness. So as we continue to go on, we're speaking right now with Neil Rubin. He's talking about Bookstock. We're also talking about just the love of books, passion for reading, as well as some of the things that we're seeing in terms of censoring books and banning books from the shelves and all the things that we're seeing happen across the country. So, we're talking about the love of books. April 23rd through April 30th at Laurel Park Place, we have Bookstock.
Bookstock!
Yeah!
Yes, and bookstockmi.org is the website for information on various sale days. As you might imagine, we love school teachers. So Tuesday and Wednesday from 2 to 7 p.m., school teachers with a school ID get 50% off.
Nice.
On the Saturday of the sale, Paperback Palooza, 12 paperbacks for $5. Yes, indeed. The final Sunday, everything's half price because anything we don't sell, we got to haul away, and who wants to do that? And I should always mention that, again, with 400,000 various items, there's way more than we can put out at any one time. So there's fresh merchandise, from morning to evening in a day, let alone from day to day. There's always something new to browse through and look at.
So just quickly, for those who may be interested in donating books or participating as a volunteer, what would you tell them to do? How would they go about doing that?
Well, the donations are, we'll start accepting donations again in a couple of months, and that schedule's always at bookstockmi.org. Unfortunately, we've got all we can handle right now, so we're not accepting donations right now. With volunteers, heck, that's typically done online or through some of the partners who we donate to. But I got to believe if you just show up at Laurel Park Place and say, hey, can I volunteer? They'll hand you an apron.
And they'll put you to work. Thank you so much. Before I let you go, is there anything else you'd like to let us know about Bookstock, this upcoming year or anything else?
Well, I know a lot of people have been unable to donate, so just keep an eye on bookstockmi.org as the year goes on, and you'll get instructions on that. Something could be very helpful for nonprofits, and a lot of schools and nonprofits, school teachers tell us they'll fill the classroom for an entire year during Bookstock, but the Monday after it ends, from I think 9 a.m. to noon, if you're with a nonprofit and you just show up with a letterhead that says, hey, I'm with a nonprofit, take whatever you want. It's all free. Just haul it away. Rec centers, schools, whoever you are, go for it. We thank you.
Thank you so much for joining the show. Excuse me. Thank you for joining the show, Neil Rubin, Bookstock. You are amazing, and you always bring passion and love of books to Culture Shift and to WDET. So, as always, thank you and good luck on this year's event.
Thank you, Tia. It's so delightful to be here.